Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Careers from the Kitchen Table, the show that teaches you how to cook without the cooking. Each week, we bring you these good old home recipes of success to assist you in finding that perfect ideal work-from-home job or the business of your choice. So we invite you and your friends to come on and join us each and every week if you want to go from that hectic highway that you drive through every day to the smooth sailing hallway. This is the show that's going to give you lots of ideas and opportunities so that you can take advantage of and finally make that transition from corporate to doing your own thing right from your home, right from your kitchen table, in your pajamas, however you choose. Now, how sweet is that? This is Raven Blair Davis. I'm the host of the show, and I'm so delighted that you're back with us today because I have a treat for you. Mr. Jack Canfield is here. Yes, he is, and I can hear the applause all over the airwaves. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to want to run, grab something real quick to write with because you're going to want to take some copious notes as Jack speaks to us today. The success principles, and how to get from where you are to where you want to be as a business owner. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, before I bring Jack on, I'm going to tell you just a little bit about him for those few of you that may not know him, although I can't imagine that. Jack Canfield is an inspirational self-help author and success coach, famous for the popular book, him and his partner, Mark Victor Hansen, of The Chicken Soup for the Soul. He's a motivational speaking, and he has tons of books and audios out there other than Chicken Soup for the Soul, one of my favorites we're going to be speaking about today, The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. And because we're all making that transition to being a great dynamic business owner, or we're already a business owner and we're trying to go from good to great, he's going to be speaking to you today. So let's get started. We're going to respect his time and bring this man on. I am so excited, Jack. How you doing?
I'm great, Raven. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, you're absolutely welcome. Thank you for being here. Now, you know, this is a audience that a lot of people, Jack, have not made that transition yet. They're still trying to decide whether they want to leave corporate. I always try to tell them, hey, plan a plan B, just in case you don't have that choice, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. So I'm going to start out, if you don't mind, by sharing just a tad bit of your story about how you and Mark first began the Chicken Soup series. I know you went through a lot of no's, right?
Yeah, we did. We were rejected by 144 publishers before we got a yes. It took us over 16 months to find a publisher. But had we stopped at number 100, I would not be talking to you or your audience today. So I would say the key to our success has been having a clear vision and then being willing to persevere through many, many rejections until we got a yes. And that one yes with Health Communications, a little unknown publisher down in Florida, went on to sell over 10 million copies of the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, and now we have over 115 million copies of Chicken Soup for the Soul books in 47 languages. So if we had given up, I wouldn't be where I am today. So perseverance. And knowing, I think another thing I've been teaching people lately is patience.
Okay.
A lot of times we get very impatient. You know, we see a movie like The Secret, and we think all I have to do is visualize and affirm, and 1 year later I'll be a millionaire. And it takes a little bit of work, and takes a little bit of time, and not to give up on your dream. You know, it takes a while to build a big building, and it takes a while to build a great life.
It absolutely does. You know, Jack, I got to ask you this, because I know a lot of people are stuck right here. So how do we begin to discover what it is that we really, really want to do in life, and what we really are here meant to be? How do we figure that out?
Well, there are several things I look at. One is, do you notice yourself feeling jealous or envious of another person in their job or their career or what they get to do for a living? And that's often a clue. I remember I used to be envious of movie stars. They got a lot of attention. They got to travel around the world. They got to express themselves. And so I realized that those were aspects of what I wanted in my life. I also was envious of people who were teaching, like Oprah and Dr. Phil and, you know, people like that, but back then it would have been other people like, you know, that were running daytime talk shows like Merv Griffin and Johnny Carson and so forth. And so I realized that part of what I wanted was to reach lots of people. There was a message in there that I wanted to reach lots of people in an entertaining, uplifting, and empowering way. The other thing to do is look back at the times you were happiest in life. I use the story of Julie Lapley in my book, The Success Principles, where I talk about she was a student at Ohio State University. And she was not all that happy, and she thought she would be because she was studying veterinary medicine, and she had been someone who loved animals. And one day she sat down and really examined her life. It was raining out. She was depressed. She said, well, when was I happiest in life? And she realized it was when she was in student leadership positions in high school, when she was doing chaperoning of the high school student leaders at Ohio State University, and she would, you know, be part of that process for them. She said, that's when I was happiest. And she said, I get it. I love leadership. So she went to the head of the university, and she said, I'd like to major in leadership instead of veterinary medicine. They said, we don't have a program in that. She said, well, can I create a new one, and I'll take courses in communication and in media and in, you know, government, different things where I can learn a lot about leadership. So they let her develop an independent study course in leadership, and she went on. At the age of 26, she was leading leadership training for generals and colonels in the military at the Pentagon. She became a leadership instructor at the Pentagon and then went off to create her own foundation and now teaches youth leadership all across the country. She's all of like 29 years old. So the idea is, if you look back over your life and say, when was I happiest, that's going to give you clues. And the third thing I teach people is this. There's a wonderful thing called a passion test, which two of my friends, Chris and Janet Atwood, put together.
Oh, yeah, that's marvelous. Mm-hmm.
And you just simply ask yourself, you say, you know, my life is ideal when I am, and you list down 10 or 20 things that you love to do. So for me, my life is ideal when I'm teaching, when I'm learning, when I'm with spiritual people and hanging out and sharing, when I am developing new products, when I'm hanging out with my family, when I'm traveling and so forth. So I list all those down, and then I go back and say, if I could only do one of these, which one would I do? If I had to, like life said, okay, all other 19 are impossible, you can only do one, which would I pick? And that tells you something very important about your passions. Then you look at the next 19 and say, if I could only do one of these, which one would it be? And you just kind of do a little forced choice test. Well, when I first did that with Janet about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I realized that my number one passion was hanging out with really conscious people. And I realized I wasn't doing that enough. I was teaching all my students, but I was way ahead of them. So I started something called the Transformational Leadership Council, where I invited 30 people, like John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and those kind of people, to come to my house. And we created an organization that now meets twice a year for 4 days in beautiful resort locations. We teach each other what we know. We share our latest breakthroughs. We have fun social events. And now I am fulfilling one of my passions, and it's a way that I make money, and it's a way that has led me to things like I appeared in The Secret, because they filmed The Secret at one of our events, and that changed my professional life to a large degree. I was introduced to a whole new audience I'd never been introduced before. But if I hadn't acted on that passion, I wouldn't have had that career breakthrough.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And speaking of The Secret, we absolutely love that. I think I watch that twice a week. Continuously. Oh, yeah, I absolutely love it. You know, you mentioned some very key things that I appreciate, and it took me back for a moment. And I got to tell you, Jack, I was envied the same kind of way you had that enviness. I did, too. Growing up, I love Hollywood. I love stars. I told my dad to build me a stage in the basement, because I'm from Ohio, and we had basements then. And listen to this, Jack. I used to sneak from high school up to the radio station, and the DJs called my parents all the time and told them, come get your daughter, she's up here again.
That's funny.
And then after all those years, and after all those years at the age of 55, I found my passion, or I tell people my passion found me. You know, while waiting for my mother to get well at the hospital, it was put on my heart to start doing a show to empower women, and I started my first show, Women Power, that way. So as I listened to you, it made me think, wow, he's absolutely right. This stuff kind of creeps back up in your life, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, I'm sure you know who Les Brown is.
Oh, yeah. I had a chance to interview him a few weeks ago.
Sure, he's amazing. And he probably told you that he used to sit under his bed at night, or under the covers in his bed with a flashlight, and he would pretend he was a radio announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was practicing being a radio announcer, and he went on later to become a DJ, and now he's a public speaker. And so very young age, we know. My son, I have three sons, and one is a hip-hop singer, and he was making rhymes and getting thrown out of class in school when he was in the third grade. You know, he was just constantly had to make rhythms, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I have another son who's a drummer who was always just drumming. He'd be hitting on his knees from the time he was like 5 years old. So there's something in us that we each have. It's a unique talent, a unique ability. And if we look back, I look back over my own life. I was a leader at the Boy Scouts. I was a leader in Cub Scouts. I was a leader for 2 years in a military school. I was a captain of a company, and then I was the vice president of my fraternity. And you know, captain of my football team and so forth. And what happened was I looked back and I went, oh, that's naturally who I am. I'm a leader and I'm a teacher. And so then we could say, how do I build a career on that? I've got friends who are, I mean, I have a friend, for example, who speaks nonstop about sex, and you'd think she was crazed. But what's happened is she's now gone back to school. She's training to become a sex therapist, and she's really helping. She's always been helping people with their problems. It was like something she was just interested in. It was a natural talent she had to be able to talk freely and openly about it. She reads voraciously about it, and now she's building a career around it.
Wow, amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And what a good feeling it is when you're doing what you're passionate about, isn't it?
Well, it's true. You know, most people, they have it wired up backwards. They go and do a job they don't want so they can get enough money to then go spend it to do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find a job, and everybody can if you look hard enough, where you can do what you want to make a living. A friend of mine loves to travel. What's she do for a living? She takes people around the world to spiritual centers like Machu Picchu in Peru, or she'll take people to the Taj Mahal in India, or to the Wailing Wall in Israel, or to, you know, Stonehenge in England and so forth. And she has figured out how to make a living doing what she loves.
Wow. You know what? I got to ask you this because I know what you're saying about how to discover what we want and what we're meant to be. But a lot of times once we discover that, we're having problems with staying focused because there's so many distractions around us. How do we get past that? How do we stay laser focused?
Well, our environments are very important. I say that, 50% of your life is determined by your environment.
Mm-hmm.
And 25% is your mindset and 25% is your skill set. So you need to know the skills in your case of, you know, putting on a radio show. In my case, being a public speaker and a trainer and an author and so forth. But your environments are critical. And your environments are made up of several things. One is the people in your environment, who you surround yourself with. A lot of times you surround yourself with people who want to go out and drink and get drunk and, you know, party and so forth versus people who study and focus and work on their careers and are uplifting and encouraging and supportive of your dreams versus people who are naysayers and whiners and complainers and blamers. So that's a big piece of it. The other thing is we now know that the average American has three or more television sets in their room. For example, we know that if you have a television set in your bedroom, you're going to have 50% less sex than people who don't have a television in their bedroom, which I found to be a very interesting statistic.
Oh, really? Now, that is interesting. Honey, the television's got to go.
That's
okay,
right.
No.
But the other thing is that, as you said, we're so distracted. You know, we get in a car, we turn the radio on. You know, it's like we don't have any time to really think and focus. So what you want to do, and I found this is really important for stay-at-home entrepreneurs, people working from their home, is this. You have to create your days and structure your days. And we found a very powerful way, which I write about in my book, The Success Principles. It's called the Entrepreneurial Time System, developed by a guy named Dan Sullivan in Chicago. He divides days into focus days, free days, and buffer days. And a focus day is 65 to 85% of your activity, because there's always some distractions, are focused on the things that produce bottom line results. So for me right now, talking to you, more people find out about my book, that produces a bottom line and increased book sales. When I'm out speaking for a fee, when I'm writing my books, when I'm developing products, when I'm doing marketing teleseminars, etc. So I have three focus days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I do 85% of my work is focused on my talents that produce bottom-line income. The second thing I have is a buffer day. And a buffer day is where I do the things that allow me to be able to do focus days. This is where I delegate. This is days where I get training. Travel days are like this. If I was taking a seminar somewhere, if I was training a staff person, it's when I'm reading books, doing research, etc. So I'm not making money, but I'm doing the things that are required. And so for me, Tuesdays and Thursdays are buffer days. And then free days are days from midnight to midnight where you have total away from work free days. And by that definition, many people haven't had a free day in 10 years. And we find for entrepreneurs that the more free days you build in, the more productive you get, because it's on your free days when you have your best ideas, when you meet interesting people that are not in your field, like you're out golfing or you're taking a walk on the beach or you're taking a hike in the woods or whatever, or you're on vacation. And so we want to have structured days. And what I do is I label my days in my calendar, and all my focus days are blue, my buffer days are green, and my free days are red. And so I know what is which and what I'm supposed to be doing that day. And so I can schedule that and look at and see how my week is structured out so I don't end up, you know, booking free activities on a buffer day and so forth. Now, the other thing is we know from the research, if you want to be really focused, you want to have you want to do your planning the night before the day that's coming up. Because if you walk into your office without a schedule for the day, you're going to be buffered around by the incoming phone calls. You're going to be buffered around by people walking into your office. You know, all that stuff's going to distract you. But if you have a schedule that you've made up the night before that says from 8 to 10, I'm going to work on the Johnson presentation, and from 10 to 12, I'm going to handle emails, and from 12 to 12:45, I'm going to eat lunch, and from 12:45 to 2:45, I'm going to work on my book, and so on and so forth. So you schedule your day in chunks of time rather than having a to-do list. Because our tendency when we have to-do lists is to do the easiest thing first. So you want to schedule the hard things at the time of day when you have the most energy, which for me is in the morning. And then I want to schedule the creative things for me usually around 5 until 7, which is my staff's gone. I'm not expected to be home yet. And that's when I write. That's when I come up with creating new products and so on and so forth. So basically, schedule your day the night before so when you walk in, you hit the decks running. The last thing to stay focused is this. You want to have what we call an accountability partner. We all know that when we work in a company, we have a manager, and a manager holds us accountable to the things that we agree to do for the company. But often when we're entrepreneurs and we're out on our own, we don't have anyone holding us accountable. So you want to find someone else who's equally committed to their growth and success and agree that every day you're going to start out in the morning. My accountability calls are like at 7 a.m. with my accountability partner. And it's a five-minute call. It's not a social call. It's not a time to, like, because when they become long, you begin not looking forward to them because they just take up too much time. And what I do is I make commitments from my goal list the night before when I've scheduled out my day, and I tell my accountability partner, these are the things that I commit to completing today. And they tell me the same things. Then the next morning, we get on the phone, and we say, did you complete those things? And if I say no, I don't get to give excuses or talk about it. I simply have to recommit. It's kind of like, the fact that I know that I have to account to somebody, I don't want to have to call them up in the morning and say I didn't do any of it. I copped out. And so, therefore, I tend to do it. A lot of times it gets done at 11 at night simply because I know I don't want to have to call my accountability partner the next morning and tell them I didn't do it. We have a coaching program in which we have everyone on a computerized action tracker where every morning they list the actions they're going to do in the area of healthy, wealthy, and happy. So I know the things that make me healthy, like 20 minutes of exercise, aerobically lifting weights, drinking more water, eating my vitamins, not drinking, etc. So all those are boxes that I can check off, and I commit to one or two in the healthy section, the wealthy section, which might mean making outgoing marketing calls, calling clients and asking for feedback, etc. And then in the happy, I know that if I meditate, listen to comedy tapes, play with my cat, spend time with my children, take a walk with my wife, whatever, I'm happier. So each day I'm committed to things that make me happier, healthier, and wealthier in my business.
I love the way you laid that out for us. Thank you. We're going to get a lot from that as we go back and listen to this replay. And, you know, you really discussed some important things because we seem to sometimes make out that to-do list, and it overwhelms us, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's too many things on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you take that whole to-do list and say, okay, what's most important to get done and put on a schedule, and if you just do your schedule, you can forget about the to-do list until later that night and then you make your schedule for the next day.
Yeah, my biggest problem is the computer. I have a big note, Jack. It says, step away from the computer. I have to. Let's talk about visualization.
Yes.
How important, Jack, is that for us to be still during that moment and take some time to visualize our success?
Well, according to all the research that I've read, and there's quite a bit. For example, right now, if you're watching the Olympics, as most people are, what happens is we have at least 10 visualization experts that are over in China working with our American team, and there's probably more from all over the world. We originally learned about the power of visualization in sports from the Russians back in the Olympics that were taking place in Rome back in, I think it was in the 60s or 70s. And what happens is that our unconscious mind and our body cannot tell the difference between a real event and a vividly imagined event. So what we've learned in sports is that we can rehearse anything and actually have an increase in production. For instance, at Ohio State University, they had three groups of basketball players. And they did a pretest of their foul shooting averages. And then they had one group not practice for 30 days, another group practice shooting foul shots for a minimum of 30 minutes a day for 30 days. And the third group, not to practice, not to touch a ball, but simply to visualize shooting foul shots and everyone going in, nothing but net. And at the end of 30 days, they retested them. The ones who had not practiced showed no improvement. The ones who had practiced showed 24% improvement. And the ones who had only practiced in their mind and never touched the basketball showed 23% improvement, only 1% different from the group that had actually done it. So we know that we can do what we call mental rehearsal through visualization. The other thing we now know from visualization is that when I visualize a result that I want in my life as if I already have it, this is a discipline you have to develop, what I call the daily disciplines of success. And there are about five of them I teach. We can go through those if you want. But
yeah.
One of them is that you must visualize every day for a few minutes all of your goals that you've written down for the year as already complete. So you've got the $150,000 a year income. You've become vice president of sales for your corporation, or your company has, you know, opened up a sales office in Iowa. You know, whatever your goals are,
mm-hmm.
and your physical goals and friendship goals and family goals and health goals and all of that. Then you see it as if it's already completed. And here's the kicker. You got to feel the feeling you'd feel if you already had it. You know that from watching The Secret.
Well, you got to feel it.
Yeah, you got to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, they'll watch The Secret and they go, that's cool, but they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the doing of it. And what happens are two things that are critical. Number one, you're sending out a kind of like an order form, if you will, to the giant store in the sky. It's like a cosmic Costco. And anything you want will be delivered to you in terms of an opportunity. Resources will come forward. Ideas will come to you in the shower, et cetera, for how you can fulfill whatever this desire is you have, the new car, the new job, the house, the perfect spouse, whatever. The second thing that happens is that you will start to reprogram part of your brain called the reticular activating system. Right now, you're not aware of what's going on in your left foot, but as soon as I say left foot, you feel it. And so there's a little filter in your brain that's filtering out a lot of what you're perceiving. Unfortunately, it filters out a lot of opportunities. When you have a visualization of your goal is already complete, it programs the reticular system to start letting in all of the things that will help you achieve your goal. People, resources, books, magazine articles, TV shows. You will start to see the things that were always there that can help you be successful. So here's the last part. You must do this for 30 days in a row with no interruption. I won't go into the research because we're short on time here, but there was research done by NASA, the National Aeronautics Space Agency, that proves that in order to change your reticular activating system, to reprogram it, takes 30 days with no interruption. So that means on the weekends, the whole deal, for a minimum of a month, and then the magic starts to happen.
That's when it happens. Wow. You know, in your book, you created some visualization exercises, and I got to tell you, Jack, I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And we are short of time, but can you maybe just kind of put us there for a second and share one with us?
Well, I'm not sure. There's several of them in the book which ones you thought were fantastic. But, you can always chime in and tell me if you want. But the couple of the ones are simple.
Mm-hmm.
To simply visualize the seven areas of your life, which include your job and career, your financial life, your
mm-hmm.
family and friends, your health and fitness, your contribution to society that you want to make, the things you want to own, which I call personal, and then your developmental goals like spiritual and emotional growth. And to visualize what it would look like if you had the ideal life. And to do that, you know, to really take about a half hour and just pretend there's no limit. I can have anything I want. What would I have? And to let that come from your unconscious as a visualization, very, very profound. And once you get clear about what it is you want, then I say go to the external visualization process,
okay.
which is creating a vision board. Again, if you go back to The Secret, John Assaraf had the vision board with his house on it, and then all of a sudden he's living in this 14-acre, it must be about a 20,000-square-foot house. It's huge. Looks like a hotel. I've been there. And, you know, he just pulled out a picture from a magazine, put it on his vision board, and 5 years later he was living in that exact same house. I've used that to generate millions of dollars to put our book on number one, the bestseller list on the New York Times. Like, we'll take a bestseller list from the New York Times, white out the number one book, and then type in the same font, Chicken Soup for the Soul or The Success Principles or
I
Power.
I remember that.
Focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll put that all over the office. My favorite one recently, a guy went to a poster company, took a picture of a BMW in his garage. He didn't own one yet. He just rented one for a day, took a picture of it. Went to a billboard company, had them make a billboard the side of his garage door, and then he mounted that billboard on the front of his garage door So when you drive by his house, you see the BMW in his garage.
Wow, isn't that something?
How cool is that?
Yeah, well, I really like vision boards. I'm big on that. I've always had them for years because I come from telemarketing, telesales world, Jack,
mm-hmm.
and they teach you in sales to do stuff like that because you need that to get through all those calls for
sure. It goes back to what you said about staying focused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it keeps. Like, I have a digital vision board, which we're now selling. If people go to my website, jackcanfield.com, and just put your name and address in there, like your email address, we'll send you information on it. We just developed this. It's way cool, where if I'm looking at my computer as I am right now, I haven't been on it because I'm talking to you,
mm-hmm.
all the images of the things I want are scrolling by my screen as
my
screensaver.
Oh, how cool. Oh, my goodness, that's so cool. Okay, tell them where to go get that again.
Just go to www.jackcanfield.com. That's C-A-N-F-I-E-L-D, jackcanfield.com. And there's a little box that asks you for your email address. And when you come in, and we have some information there, but we'll send you a whole lot more. We're just developing the marketing materials now. But this is a radical departure from the cut and paste, what I call ransom note vision boards that we've been doing in the past.
Wonderful, and I love that. I know I'm going to get me one of those. That sounds exciting because I love
exciting.
Visual board. And I bet that really makes it pop at you, doesn't it?
It does, and, mm-hmm. and it has an affirmation that you type in that goes along with it.
Oh, wow, how but awesome. Jack, I noticed if we have 1 minute. Is it possible to squeeze in two more questions?
Sure, go.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good deal. Okay, wonderful, Jack. Well, we're going to get us a vision board, that's for sure. Let's talk about the home business person being stuck in that mode to where they're stuck in procrastination. I think you talked earlier, we have to stay focused and we have to chunk things up. You know, is it fear or is it really procrastination that's holding us back, or is it
both?
Well,
it's always fear.
Is it?
Yeah, fear mm-hmm. of failure, fear of rejection, fear of looking foolish, you know, all that kind of stuff. So basically the way to get through fear is twofold. Number one, do the thing you're afraid of. Do it in baby steps. Don't,
mm-hmm.
don't freeze yourself. Get that accountability partner to hold your hand and walk you through it. There's something we call consequences. Make a deal that if you don't, you know, call 10 people by next Friday or open up your storefront or whatever it is your goal is by a certain date, that you're going to write a check for $1,000 to your accountability partner.
Ooh.
That kind of consequence, which
mm-hmm.
no one wants to do, becomes very motivational. And you make that a public declaration that lots of people know about.
Mm. And who wants to pay up $1,000, even $100, right?
Yeah. Well, I have an African-American friend who made his agreement was he would write a check to the Ku Klux Klan for $1,000 if he didn't keep his goal. So you know he didn't want to do that.
So absolutely not.
He definitely got it done.
One of the first principles you mentioned in your book, and again, everyone, we are talking about the success principles, how to get you where you are to where you want to be, and that's the goal for sure. So, Jack, in your book, you spoke about responsibility,
mm-hmm.
how we have to own up, really own up to it. Can you speak to us a little bit more about that?
Well, I teach my students you have to act as if you're 100% responsible for everything that happens in your life. Whether or not that's true, nobody
mm-hmm.
can really know for sure. But here's the point. If you pretend it's true, you act as if it's true, then when things don't work out, instead of blaming the world and whining and complaining, you're asking the question, what did I do that made it not work, or what could have I done that made it work better? So you're always looking for more valuable information. And I teach a model called E plus R equals O, events plus responses equal outcomes. And if you can't keep doing the same response, if the event changes and expect the same outcome, 2 plus 2 equals 4, but if a recession comes along and the economy is doing something different, you've got to change your response. One of my friends is a Lexus dealer. Nobody was coming in to buy Lexuses, so they said, what are we going to do? And they said, well, let's go where the people are. If they're not coming to us, let's go to them. So they started taking fleets of Lexuses to parties, to the marina, to the polo matches, things like that in wealthy areas. And they would say to someone, have you ever driven a Lexus? No. Would you like to? Yeah. Come on out. I got one outside. And they'd take them for a little test drive. Well, you know, and I know, if you've ever test driven a new luxury car and then got back into your old car, it just didn't work anymore.
Uh-uh. Doesn't feel right, Jack, anymore.
That's right. Well, they were selling 65% of the people a new Lexus within 2 or 3 weeks. This was in the height of a recession. So the basic idea here is you don't blame the recession. You don't blame George Bush. You don't blame the Saudis for the gas prices. You simply say, this is what's changed. What do I have to do different? And most of us don't want to do anything different because it's uncomfortable. But you got to get out of your comfort zone and just experiment. And here's the idea. Live your life as an experiment. The law of probability says the more things you try, the more likely one of them will work.
I like that. You know, I remember hearing you say in an interview that one time that if you were not, let me see if I get this right, I think it's if you were not moving closer to what you want in life, you're probably not doing enough. Remember saying that? Because I was going to ask you to elaborate on that a little
bit. Yeah, mostly people aren't asking for what they want. All things in business move forward because someone makes an offer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll do this for you if you give me $100.
Mm-hmm.
Or make a request. You know,
right.
I'd like you to do this for me and I'm willing to pay you. Or I'd like to do this for you, or I'd like you to help me, or I'd like you to hire me, whatever it might be. And again, people have to realize that all transactions are what move things forward. So if you're not willing to risk rejection and failure and all that, you'll never get ahead. The story I like to tell that I wrote about in my book is Ignatius Piazza, a new chiropractor, gets out of chiropractic school, he's in his 20s, moves to a town where they said, we don't need any more chiropractors here. This was up near Pebble Beach in California. And we got one chiropractor for every 8 people. He said, well, I want to be here. He said, well, we're not even going to help you set up a practice. We just really don't want you here. Well, he went out and rented an office space and for 6 months did not open his office. He simply went door to door in concentric blocks around his office, going further and further and further away every day from 8:30 in the morning until about 8 at night, knocking on doors saying, hi, I'm a new doctor in town. Wonder if I could ask you a few questions. And he'd ask him, like, should I advertise in this newspaper or that newspaper? Should I call my office this name or that name? And he'd do a few of those. Then he'd say at the end, and if I have an open house, would you like to be invited when I open my office? If they said yes, he wrote down their address, and then he sent him a card. Well, 6 months later, he opened his office. He had an open house. He had several thousand people show up to it. In his first month in practice, in a town that supposedly did not need any more chiropractors, he made $72,000.
Wow.
He made over $1 million that year in a town that didn't need a new chiropractor because he knocked on 12,500 doors, talked to over 6,000 people, and ended up with almost 1,000 new clients his first year of business because he was willing to ask.
Mm, that's, you just got it. ASK, I think Jerry Clark once said, if you don't ask, you won't GET get.
That is absolutely
true. And speaking of that, that's kind of like how things went with you and Mark, correct, in bringing out Chicken Soup and making it a hit because you kept getting no's and stuff?
We went to New York. We got 24 no's in 3 days in personal visits. Then we sent out about 40 letters to other publishers, got no, 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 no.
Mm.
Everyone said, this is a stupid title. People don't listen. You know, they don't read short stories. The books don't sell. You guys are not known, blah, blah, blah. And, we just kept asking. We went to the American Booksellers Association convention where there were 4,000 publishers. We went from booth to booth to booth for 2.5 days. And it was late on the third day when someone said, we'll read it. That was the first person to say, well, read your manuscript. And so they read it, loved it, fell in love with it, decided to publish it. And in that first year, we sold over 1 million copies. The next year, we sold 6 million. The third year, we came out with a second and third book. We sold 13 million Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And Mark and I got $1.20 per book, so I'll let you do the math.
Wow, that's amazing. So if you had to close this off, if you had to share with the listeners when they're faced with challenges and adversity, the biggest lesson that you and Mark learned was what?
Don't give up. And to say it in a more positive way, persevere. Never give up your dream. You have to get more creative. You may need to learn new skills. You may need to ask for feedback and respond to the feedback. You may need to develop some qualities like toughness and strength and resolution and commitment.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep responding to the feedback, and don't get angry about it, but just keep learning, eventually you have to win. We use what we call the rule of five, which says every day if you'll do 5 specific action steps to make your dream come true, be like going to a giant redwood tree with an axe. Might take a year, but if you do 5 swipes a day, eventually that tree is going to fall down.
Oh, I like that. So whatever five action steps that's going to make you, you know, be successful in your business, don't look at what someone else is doing, but what's going to make the difference in your business, you just do it each and every day.
Each and every day, 5 specific action steps that will take your business to the next level.
Well, perfect. What a great way to end this dynamic interview. Thank you so much. Before we go, I know our listeners are going to want to grab hold of your books. I mean, Success Principles is absolutely awesome. I read it on the plane after I met you at the DSWA event, and I loved it. And I know you got lots and lots of other stuff going on. You shared about the vision board, and I am part of your newsletter where I get the Success Principles. I think it's mentorship every day,
mm-hmm.
A little email. Oh, Jack, I love that. That gives me my lift every day.
Well, that's cool.
So can you share some of the things you have and where everybody can go to get it?
Yeah, sure. We have all kinds of audio programs and video programs and DVDs. We got one called the Success Principles DVD. You can show it to your staff. It's an hour-long DVD. It's a way to motivate your family and
mm-hmm.
teach the principles. There's a whole we call it Jack in a Box. It's an entire course that I do, a 7-day training that's in there's like 26 DVDs. It's
wow.
huge.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, you can go from the very simple to the very profound. And just go to jackcanfield.com, JACKCANFIELD.com, and you can get all of that there under the products and books section. There's also a training section. We do trainings, and I do public speaking and so forth. And you can also go to thesuccessprinciples.com, thesuccessprinciples, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E-S.com, and that's where that daily download that you're getting is coming from. There's also a leader's guide to do a 6-hour success principles program. So you can learn this, take it into your own company or into your church or your family, and lead your family through a 6-hour, can be 6 days, 1 hour each, or all day, 1 day. We also have, this is a great resource, you go to askjackcanfield.com, and you can submit a question. So if you have any question about the Success Principles book or the Jack Canfield's Key to Living Law of Attraction book or vision boards, anything at all, you just type your question in. And then every month, on the first Wednesday of the month, I go in and I answer a whole bunch of questions, a free call. And you just call the number that you'll be sent once you register. And so, you know, I'm just trying to get as much information out to as many people as I can.
And you do a great job. Thank you for all you do. I think I've been on a couple of those calls. Alex Mendozian was doing a couple of them.
Yeah, Alex Mendozian interviews me.
Huge mentor of mine.
4,000 people on those calls.
Oh, yeah. He knows how to get them on there.
He does.
Absolutely, for sure. Absolutely. He's a huge mentor of mine. He's actually really responsible for me jumping into doing these radio shows from my kitchen table from home. So. Crazy about him. And you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I understand that you had a birthday this week.
I did. I'm
Tuesday.
64 years old, August 19th.
Happy belated birthday. Well, before we go, hold on a second. Hold on.
Thank you very much.
All righty, Jack. I just had to do that. Listen, this was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. You were awesome. I appreciate you. Thank you for making another dream come true. Yes, you were on my vision board, too.
That's great.
And it was absolutely wonderful. We appreciate you. Everyone, you listen to Careers from the Kitchen Table. We've been speaking with Jack Canfield, the Jack Canfield. Go check him out, jackcanfield.com. His book, The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. You definitely want to stay plugged into him. Sign up for his newsletter. You'll get uplifted like I do every day. We'll be right back with more cooking in the kitchen with some good old home recipes of success. Right back, right after this commercial break.